This is Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR. This program content is made possible in part by WKAR listeners.
And a very good afternoon. Welcome to Sports Talk 870. And I'm your host, Earl Robinson. I'll be with you until 2 o'clock discussing sports with you. So just give us a call at 355-9527 or toll free 877-9527-870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. Well, in case you haven't heard, Michigan State is going to be going to Germany for their first foot basketball game, that is, of the year. They're going to start out on November 9th on Veterans Day. They're going to play for the military at the base in Germany. So should be a very special trip for Michigan State. And I know Tom Izzo and the guys will be looking forward to playing UConn on that day in overseas. So that's congratulations to Michigan State and playing at University of UConn in Germany. And let me see if I can find a little bit more information about it. I was reading about it earlier today. And they're going to play on a U.S. Air Force base in Germany next season or this coming season in November. It's sort of too bad that, you know, football season and basketball season intersect so much. You know, all the seasons now are so long and they overlap, that is. And that's a little bit disappointing in how we overlap all our football seasons, basketball seasons. I know it can't be helped, but it just gets a little disappointing at times that both seasons have to intersect with each other. But hey, give us a call. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. Once again, the number is to call 355-9527 or toll-free 877-9527-870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. Well, Michigan State had a couple of verbal commitments, again, in football. So congratulations to the Spartans. Got a couple of more players. Added a wide receiver. Tight end have joined them. So Michigan State's doing very well in the recruiting circle. They've 13 now into that class of 2013. So Spartans are, and they also added a cornerback, that is. And so Spartans seem to be doing quite well, filling the needs that they have in football. And we'll talk more about that as we go along in today's edition of Sports Talk 870. Give us a call and talk sports with us right here on AM 870. And we'll be here until 2 o'clock. We'll be talking college football a little bit later on in the show today. And we're going to look at some of the NFL teams. Interestingly enough, Jim Schwartz and Jim Harbaugh are among the biggest jerks in the NFL. I guess that's what people have voted. They were voted 8th and 9th. They're tied for 9th on the list of NFL's biggest jerks. Number one is Eagles quarterback Michael Vick, the convicted dogfighting ringleader, and Steelers quarterback Ben Roethlisberger. Now, that makes me wonder, what do they use for a criteria? How does someone figure for the people what the rules are, what makes them be a big jerk? We know they had Schwartz and Harbaugh had the confrontation after the game last year, but that was last year, and that was a game from last year. And Michael Vick, of course, yes, that was a few years ago from, and he's been convicted of abusing dogs, and he's but he served his time as well. So I wonder. I'd like to know what people consider what makes them the biggest. Is it just still from the dog? I mean, can that's the question. Can someone lift something down? Can or do we just hold some ill wills that a person commits? Do we hold that against them basically forever? I mean, it does seem like that we have we certainly hurt or hold on our dislike for people for a long time. Once you find out they've done something bad, maybe you just didn't like them from the beginning, and then when you found out they did something wrong, that made you just just hate them a lot even more so. I don't know, but it seems like we definitely hold a grudge for a long, long time. Hey, give us a call. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. More importantly, spread the word around. Tell everyone you know you can enjoy sports every afternoon right here on AM 870 WKAR. And the Detroit Tigers won a big one last night, beating Texas Rangers, clobbering them 8-2. And now these next two nights are going to be very important ones. Can they continue to beat and hold fort over the Rangers? It's going to be interesting to see. Texas is still one of the best teams in baseball. So we will see, can the Tigers hold their own against the Texas Rangers? I mean, we look at the Tigers now, I think we can say they're not as good as we thought they would be. They've got a lot of holes to fill, a lot of holes in that lineup. So it's a lot of question marks about the Detroit Tigers. Can they win the pennant? Can they win their division? Can they get to the World Series? All questions need to be answered. And when you look at the Tigers right now, how good is the team? Do you think it's a team that can win the pennant and or win their division? A lot of questions about the Detroit Tigers. And hopefully Lynn will join us and we'll be able to answer some of your questions. Or Lynn will be able to answer some of your questions for you. We'll keep trying to get a hold of him because he was scheduled to be on with us during this hour. Hey, give us a call. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR in East Lansing. And we will continue to just look around the Tigers. I mean, excuse me, the Detroit Pistons, the draft is Thursday. So who are the Pistons looking at? And they're looking at one of the guys. They're looking at John Henson, a forward from North Carolina. They think he might be a good fit. Might be a good fit for the Pistons. Pistons lost one of their veteran players in the front office. He's going to another team as an assistant GM. So we'll say congratulations to him, basically. But he's going to be an assistant GM, and that's Perry. Perry's going to be an assistant GM, and we will we'll say good luck to him in this new position. And we're gonna talk a little bit of basketball. We've been talking somewhat the last few days, just Draymond Green and where he might land. We hope he lands. He does well, that's for sure, and he gets he's a good chance that he'll land in a good position because he's scheduled to be drafted in the bottom of the draft. So, and if he is drafted in the bottom of the draft, well, that's going to be good for him. That means he'll go to a good team, and he'll have a good shot at the team. Well, he might end up in either Orlando or Miami. Could be end up in Boston. But no matter where he lands, he should be in a good team with a good team because he's going to be at the end of the draft and he will get a good draft spot. Well, Scott Perry, who is the assistant general manager of the Detroit Pistons now, he's moving to Orlando. He's going to be with the Magic now. He's going to be a vice president of basketball operations in Orlando. So congratulations to Scott Perry. Hey, give us a call. Talk a little sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. Well, Serena Williams, as you know, yesterday got beat in the first round of the Wimbledon tournament. But the sister Serena, she just smoked it and plowed through her opponent in the first round. So congratulations to Serena, who won her first round duel in Wimbledon. So she's on her way. And Venus is out. Now, they're going to play doubles, tennis doubles, as they've done in the past. They've played doubles for several years in different tournaments. So we'll see Serena and Venus on the same court. Hopefully, it'll be something that they will be able to dominate there and have a strong punch. Well, So give us a call. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. You know, spread the word around, though. We really want you to tell folks, you know, everyone you know about, you know, what you want to do. And we've been looking at the playoffs, that we're going to have in college football, and want to know, do you really think a lot about the playoffs? What's your thoughts on the playoffs, of this potential playoff we will have? You know, a four-team playoff, should it be a bigger playoff? Or are you content right now that it's going to start at a four-team playoff? Or should it even start at a bigger playoff? Is a six or an eight-team playoff? You know, because I have a hard time believing that it's going to stay a four-team playoff. I would say it's probably going to be get to eight teams eventually. So should they just start out at an eight-team playoff? Or do you think it's something they've got to work their way up towards? And is four teams enough teams, you know, and how does that affect the Big Ten and Notre Dame? How does that affect them? So that, and that's a couple of questions you can answer as well. How does Notre Dame and the Big Ten and teams from this Midwestern area, because we know where the strongest teams are, how do you think the Big Ten will do in this tournament? So we'll ask Drew Sharp about that, just to see how he believes the Big Ten is going to do and how they will compete for a national title, or will they have much of a chance to compete for a national title, and how will they factor in this committee? They say a committee is going to pick the four teams for the finals. And probably it looks like they're going to be teams that at least win a conference championship, or have enough teeth for the team winning a national to win a national championship by what they do in their conference championship. Still a lot of questions to be answered and to be asked. So we'll talk with Drew Sharp about that in coming up. And are you satisfied at all, if you heard about the runoff they're going to have in the two girls who tied for third in the Olympic trials? You know, Allison Felix and another young lady tied for third place. They're either going to have a runoff or a coin flip. Is either one of those satisfied to you? I would assume the young ladies will try to run for that third and final spot in the 100-meter dash. But, you know, they could flip a coin to do it. So it'll be interesting to see if what they do. I would assume that they would have a runoff, that's for sure. But, hey, give us a call. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870. Just wanted to let you know you're stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break on AM 870 WKAR.
Peter McBride grew up on a ranch along the Colorado River, but no matter where you live, he says, the river likely affects you and the food you eat.
It is really the lifeblood. They call it the American Nile.
I'm Neil Conan, the long reach of the Colorado River. We're at the Aspen Institute, next Talk of the Nation, from NPR News.
And that's Talk of the Nation coming up today at 2 o'clock, right here on AM 870 WKAR.
Look for a high of 79 degrees with sunny skies today. Overnight, the low 57 and partly cloudy. Partly sunny and windy tomorrow, Wednesday's high 88. Thursday, even hotter with a high of 92. Mostly sunny and windy with a slight chance of rain and thunderstorms. I'm Scott Pohl.
And give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527, or toll free, 877-9527-870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. We're going to talk a little bit of football today, a little bit of baseball today. We're going to chat with our good friend Drew Sharp from the Detroit Free Press, and we're going to get his intakes on this proposed bowl championship series, the 4-team playoff. So let's bring in Drew Sharp and hear what Drew has to say. Drew, how you doing, buddy?
Oh, the Big Ten's dead. The Big Ten's dead.
Why do you think that the Big Ten won't be able to compete with this four teams in a playoff series that they're proposing?
Well, I've been saying this for the last 10 years, that the Big Ten is an inferior quote unquote power conference, and that if you ever got a playoff, that rewarded the top-ranked teams, not just teams that won conference championships, but the top-ranked teams, the Big Ten is going to suffer mightily. And I think this is how it's going to be set up. The conference, the Big Ten was hoping that of the top four, three of these teams would be conference champions, and that the fourth team, the fourth spot, would be a wild card, if you will, an at-large team. But it's very clear the SEC got what it wanted. It's going to be the top four teams, period, regardless of whether they won a conference championship or not.
Well, but that might not be too bad. I mean, teams have been known to win 10, 11 games. 11 might be enough. I mean, you know, most years very rarely do we have undefeated teams, as you know, most years. Most of the time, a team has one losses competing. Had a couple of years where two teams two teams.
I told you this earlier. Go over the 14 years of the BCS. The Big Ten has only had at least one team ranked in the top four in the final regular season ranking six times in the 14 years of the BCS. The SEC has had that 11 times. The Big 12 has had that 10 times. And the Big 12 has a big advantage now because until they get a 12th team, they're not going to have a conference championship game, which means one more opportunity to get another loss. And this is going to hurt these conferences. It's going to hurt the other conferences. The Big 12 now has a huge advantage not having a conference championship game.
It's funny how we complained and wanted a conference championship for game all these years, and now you're saying a conference championship game isn't good for the Big Ten or for a lot of conferences.
It doesn't, because if the team loses, if you have a number one ranked team, a number one or number two ranked team, and they lose the conference championship game, therefore they're not the conference champion. They're not technically the conference champion, so they can't use that as an argument. And then with an extra loss, they lose out on the at-large. So some people say it's an extra opportunity to get an extra win. That's true, but in situations like this where, it's losses that probably mean more than victories. You can afford a good loss. You can't afford a bad loss. Or you're going to ruin that argument that you're going to have with the selection committee.
Now, could some teams probably end up similarly like Michigan did last year? Could they, who got in, who didn't play for a conference championship, but were good enough to play, in a national title game? Could that happen where a team
But Michigan last year was not even in the top four. They were barely in the top 15 of the final rankings. That team wouldn't even have been a factor in a national playoff. The Big Ten, the highest ranked Big Ten team was Wisconsin. They were sixth, maybe fifth, sixth, or maybe seventh. At the end of the regular season. So they wouldn't even have qualified for this. And the last time a Big Ten team has finished in the top four was 2007. That was Ohio State when they had the rest of the country had these losses at the end. And Ohio State wound up getting the number one ranking in the BCS at the end of the regular season. Since then, the Big Ten has not had one team ranked in the top four at the end of the regular season. So that doesn't bode well for their participation in what amounts to now is a mini playoff tournament.
So what do you think it's going to do to an impact that it's going to have on the Rose Bowl?
Well, the Rose Bowl now will be less about the Big Ten and the Pac-12, and the Rose Bowl will be about how many national semifinals are they going to host. That's what the Rose Bowl is going to be about now. In those years when they do get the Big Ten and the Pac-12 champion playing, it'll be primarily because neither one of those teams are good enough to be in the national semifinal.
Now, when we were talking today, you said the fans are really going to be hurt by this. How does it impact the fans? Or basically, a lot of the fans, as you know, they're going to be sitting home in front of their TV watching these games on television for the most part.
It screws the fan who buys tickets. Because now, if you're in a conference that has a conference championship, you're now going to be asked to pay premium dollar. If you want to see your team compete for the national championship, you're going to have to pay not only the exorbitant fees for the regular season, but you're going to have to pay to watch them play the conference championship. If they win that game, you're going to have to pay to fly out to Pasadena or New Orleans, wherever the national semifinals played. And then 2 weeks later, you're going to be asked to pay premium prices for a national championship game. Now, you tell me how that's going to fly. It won't. You know, and this is why if you had them on campus sites, maybe you can get away with that. But they're not going to do that. So basically, if you're counting on the purchase of tickets to make this thing work, it's not going to work. You're going to see a lot of half-empty stadiums for these national semifinals. And for all the complaining that say, well, you know, we don't want a game to be held in a 60,000-seat stadium, you might be better off having that. Because you wouldn't want the Rose Bowl, which can seat 100,000, to be half-empty. Because what message does that send about the popularity of this new playoff system?
Yes, that could hold a problem for especially for the Big Ten and other teams. But a four-team playoff system, as we've talked about before, you know, yes, the SEC would have a heads up, and of course the Big 12, and of course the Pac-10. If a USC gets back up and becomes, and Oregon is already there, so you'd have those two teams, and you have in the Big 10 right now, you have Wisconsin and Michigan State, and Ohio State and Michigan are on their way back, so you have teams there. So
you're going to have, but Earl, here's what you have, because now that the Big 12 has aligned itself with the SEC. With the Champions Bowl, you know, however you want to call it, more likely than not, three of those four teams are going to be comprised of SEC and Big 12 teams, because that's where the power base is now in college football. That's the alignment that matters the most, and what's going to drive it, because that was the alliance that drove the parameters of the playoff system to where they are, what we expect that will be approved perhaps as early as sometime this afternoon or this evening. The SEC and the Big 12 is driving this. And the Big 10 and the Pac-12, they're waving their hands out there and say, wait a minute, don't leave us, at least save us a little smidgen of the back seat, if possible. Because it's really, really going to hurt the Big 10 big time.
What about Notre Dame?
Notre Dame the same way. Midwest football is dead. They just killed it. This new alignment just killed football in the Midwest. Because now these programs, to be able to play in this championship setting, this playoff setting, they're going to have to consistently get 10 and 11 win seasons to even have a remote chance. And the Big Ten, as balanced as it's going to be now in the future, because, like I said, Wisconsin and Michigan State aren't going anywhere. It's not like it was 10, 15 years ago where those teams were basically garbage for the most part, and Ohio State and Michigan could pretty much guarantee one of those teams would wind up with 11 wins. That's not going to happen anymore. More times than not, the best team in the Big Ten will be 10-2 going into the conference championship game. So it goes back to what I said before. All you're doing is open yourself up then now where if you do win, 11-2 might be enough. Probably won't be in most years, but then you open yourself up for a loss. At 10-3, there's no way you're going.
Do you think that maybe, Drew, that too many fans are we living in the past in the Big Ten? I mean, you know, we talk so much about tradition and all this stuff. Are we living too much in the past? Is it time to maybe even go more into the future?
Well, I think it's hard for them to go to the future because the future of college football. And, again, I've been writing this and saying this for 10 years, 10, 15 years, and people just chose to ignore it. The power of college football is shifting to the Sun Belt area because that's where the top football players are living now.
Yeah.
That's where they're living. And it's just impossible for the Big Ten to get enough of that talent to level the playing field, as it were. The advantage in college football are going to be to those teams in the Sun Belt region. And that's the SEC and the Big 12 right now. That's the SEC and the Big 12 for the most part. And you put the Pac-12, you know, with the USC, you factor them in there as well. But that's where the power is. It's not in the Midwest. So for all the clamor about all these great recruiting classes that Ohio State and Michigan whatever, Notre Dame, all these great recruiting classes that they're getting, primarily based out of Midwest talent, is only going to take them so far. It's only going to take them so far. We have just made college football a national sport now. It's always been regional. That was the charm of the sport. That's what made it so attractive to so many people. You're now making it a national sport. And the Big Ten and Notre Dame cannot compete at a national level consistently because they're not getting the national championship-level talent in their own backyard like those other programs.
And that part is unfortunate because we know about the recruiting and how
and it's unavoidable. It's just the way the future. You say, or they're caught in the past. Well, not so much caught in the past is that the present and the future, the economy has changed in this country. That people are moving. You know, there are more growth opportunities in the South, in the Southeast, and in the West right now. It's not in the Midwest. And, you know, you still get a good number of good football players, in Michigan, Ohio. Ohio is one aberration.
Yeah.
But Michigan, Pennsylvania, and these other states. But for the most part, it's these guys down south and out in the far west. That's where the talent's at. And that's where the power is now in college football. And this new playoff alignment is going to solidify that power.
I know we've never talked a whole lot about football in the East, and it seems like the football powers in the East have been getting better over these last 8 to 10 years. Could they have a good say in the new alignment in the
what powers in the East? What powers in the East?
You've seen Rutgers, Boston College is better in Maryland.
Powers. I mean, they're so teams. When has an Eastern team? When's the last time an Eastern-based team has finished in the top four?
Oh, no. Hasn't been that way, but they've been getting better, I believe. Just
they're a higher level of mediocrity. That's all it is with these. I mean, when people were saying this is where the Big Ten needs to branch out, if you're going to expand, and my point has always been, what does anyone from the East bring you? What does it bring you? It doesn't make the level of competition, and it doesn't improve the level of competition in the conference. If you don't add Texas or Notre Dame, then you're not really adding any meat, additional meat to the table here. It just doesn't help them.
So you're basically saying the Big Ten, as far as a national power or being a national power conference at all, they're done.
It confirmed it now. Mm-hmm. I maintained this for years. But this new alignment confirms it. College football is now national. It is now national. It's no longer as regional as we thought, as we want it to be. The Big Ten is not going to be able to compete consistently at that national level because they simply are not. They are not going to have access to the players you're going to need.
Do you see the bowl system changing at all, or will the bowls still be, as we've known for all these years, are the main driving force behind college football, or does that sort of disappear?
The bowls have changed. They will change completely. There's no question about that. Even though they will be used as a national semifinal, what made the bowls special is that they marked the end of the season.
Yeah.
They were the... That was what you strove for, because that's why fans would spend 6-7 days out there, spend all the money, get the tickets, and have a great time. Say no, it's a reward for the season. And that reward, you knew there was another game after that, but now the bowls are going to change because if you're a national semifinal, if you win, there's another game. So now you have to plan accordingly. Do I want to spend extra money? Maybe I'll pass on going to the Rose Bowl, because it's only a national semifinal game. I mean, did we ever think we'd hear that said about the Rose Bowl? And if you're the other bowl games that are not involved in the semifinal rotation, who really cares? Who really cares about whether or not you're playing in the Sugar Bowl if it's not connected in the playoff process? Who's going to care? What we've done, I hope all the fans who scream for playoffs, I hope they're happy about this, because I guarantee you, Earl, in 2 or 3 years after we see this process, they're going to hate this more than the BCS, because it's going to wind up being more political, more controversial, and even more corrupt because of all the money that's involved in there. But we got to sell it on the field. We have to improve the product. Okay, this is what happens. Sometimes you think you're making a product better, of improvement there, but in fact, you're making it worse. I firmly believe that's what you're seeing right now. You're going to make college football worse.
Well, as I told you earlier, how do the players benefit from this? It seems like the players are really getting the shaft here.
They're not getting the shaft. I mean, I know they need to be paid. With all this money, that means they should be paid. Well, again, You want to pay them, just add to the further corruption. It's not going to solve a problem. Paying players are never – people use that as an excuse. If you paid the players, they're less likely to cheat. No, they aren't. They'll cheat even more. Yeah, you know, players don't cheat because they're not getting paid. They cheat because they feel they're entitled to do this. They're entitled to the special, quote-unquote, privileges of seeking compensation that isn't normally approved, isn't ordinarily approved. That's not going to stop the cheating. Now, where I think it helps the players a little bit, when you're an NFL team scouting these players and now you have a, quote-unquote, playoff with a national semifinal where games are really – there's something at stake for that. It may improve the exposure that certain players get because now they're in an environment where, you know, a win is very, very important because it will lead you further into the playoffs and you have a chance to play for the national championship. So those two games, those two extra games a team might play because of that, it could help a recruit, help a player as far as improving his NFL exposure.
Okay, got a caller for you, Drew. Right. Let's see. Tom is on the line. Tom, how you doing?
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
What's up,
beautiful
Tom?
Day in the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've covered this already, but I want to follow up on the Pistons draft to see where you guys think the Pistons are going, any trade possibilities, or what they'll do if they stick with where they're at. And I'll take your answer off the air.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, the Pistons, they invited six guys in yesterday. John Henson, Sullinger, Zeller, I believe, was one of them from North Carolina, Perry Jones. Right now, the six guys they brought in were all, quote-unquote, bigs. The safe pick for the Pistons, if they stay at number nine, would be John Henson, power forward out of Carolina, who's kind of a John Sally type. You know, he's long, athletic. He will improve them as giving weak side defensive help as a shot blocker. He would definitely help there. He's not going to give you much offensively, but he's a safe pick. The guy I'm intrigued with is Perry Jones, out of Baylor, 6'10", you know, around, I'll say 6'10", very long, very, very athletic, very fast. The one thing the Pistons lack is speed on the wing, guys who can run the floor and can finish plays. Brandon Knight, I thought, did a pretty good job, all things considered, as a rookie point guard a year ago, considering there was a lockout and that this was a team that really didn't branch out and push the ball much. They stayed pretty much in half court, and that's where I think that when you saw Brandon Knight struggle, it's because of that. They're relying too much on half court. You bring up Perry Jones, a guy who can run the floor, it makes Brandon Knight a more effective point guard because I think he would play better if he can push the tempo as much as possible. So Perry Jones is a guy I would, if I'm still there at nine, that I would give strong consideration to. But stay away from Jared Sullinger.
Yeah, there's a lot of reports about that he's got injury problems.
Well, he's got back issues, supposedly. Mm-hmm. And I would not take him in the lottery. Now, there's some speculation that the Pistons, they have two second-round draft picks that they might be compelled to package those to try to move up late in the first round, if Jared Sullinger is still there. I mean, that's a wild card situation there. Where Sullinger, you know, the Pistons have had very good success in rehabbing red flags. Antonio McDyess comes to mind, you know. Mm-hmm, we had the knee problems that he had, and he was very productive for them for quite a few years. So that would be a turnoff as far as investing a lottery pick on him. But you know, a late first-round pick, if Jared Sullinger is still there, that would be something worth considering.
Okay. Hey, Drew, I know I got to ask you, what the heck's going on with the Tigers? What kind of team is this Tiger team?
We still don't know yet. I think we'll know by the end of this week. Two things are coming up this week. They have a very big four-game road trip at Tampa Bay, which last couple years, They're a trip to Tampa Bay kind of served as an indication of how this team is going to finish out the season. So I think that will be a very revealing four games. And then Thursday, Victor Martinez heads to Colorado to visit his surgeon. He's going to have an MRI. And the expectation, Mike Ellis told me this last week, the expectation now is that they're going to get good news. and that he may be able to return earlier than they previously thought. So if they get a good report on Martinez's knee Thursday, I do think that will have an effect on how they look at their trading options within the next couple weeks. Because if Martinez is back and fill that fifth spot, they can get rid of Delmon Young, you know, then maybe they just look for a starting pitcher at the deadline instead of looking for an RBI guy who can put in the middle of the batting order. So we'll know a lot more about this team. There will be clarity on this team after this coming week.
Yes, because that's something I know the fans are really looking for. They just want to know. I mean, what kind of team is it? Do you think this team is constituted that it can still win the division? Are they that good, or is just this basically a middling team that's always going to win lose?
Right. We'll know. I think health wise, they've had their share of injuries, like a lot of other teams have. But all they are right now is just a decent team. If they prove something in these seven games, they killed Texas last night. If they win the Texas series and take 3 or 4 against Tampa Bay, after these seven games, wind up 5-2, you get a good report on Victor Martinez Thursday, then maybe this is what gives this team the swagger, that edge that Jim Leland has said they've lacked for a good chunk of the season.
Hey, Drew, I want to thank you for being with me. Always a pleasure talking with you. And we'll be discussing college football a lot more. The season is getting closer. So we'll be discussing that and how the Big Ten is going to fare and just the play in general of the Big Ten. So, I know you've got your song ready for me.
All right, look, I'll say in all honesty, the Big Ten is probably more balanced now than it has been at any time in recent memory.
Mm-hmm.
And balance, now you say, well, that means everything's good. And I think balance means that's parity. It's mediocre for the most part. There are no excellent teams in that conference. But you have more solid teams than we've had at any time. That's why I think you're going to be hard-pressed to see a team go 10-2 or 11-1 for the next couple of years. And the way this playoff is set up, unless you're at the very minimum, 10-2 heading to your conference championship game, you have no chance. 10-2 does not put you in the top 4 rankings.
Yeah, that's true. That would be tough to get a 10-2 team, that's for sure.
It's not going to put you in the top 4.
Yeah. Well, Drew, it's good to talk with you, my friend, and I'll be talking with you pretty soon again. So,
all right. Talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon, buddy. Yep, bye-bye. Right. And that's Drew Sharp from the Detroit Free Press talking sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break right here on AM 870.
Writers draw inspiration from the world around them. In the Middle East lately, that world's changed dramatically.
It is only the poets and the writers who can create the future of the Arab world.
Writer Reza Aslan. I'm Neil Conan. Middle East writers rewriting the Middle East. We're at the Aspen Institute. Next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And that is Talk of the Nation coming up at 3 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
Thanks for tuning in. I'm Scott Pohl with the weather. Today's high is 79 and sunny. Partly cloudy tonight, the low 57. For Wednesday, partly sunny and windy, a high of 88. Mostly sunny, breezy, and hot on Thursday. Maybe a little rain and thunderstorm activity with a high of 92.
And give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527, or toll-free, 877-9527-870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. Give us a call. Send us an email. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. More importantly, just spread the word around. Tell everyone you know you can enjoy sports every afternoon right here on WKAR. Aaron, as you heard my discussion with Drew Sharp, what's your opinion on this whole playoff? Do you think that really is going to hurt the Big Ten, like he was saying, that the Big Ten is going to be left out in the cold of this playoff series?
Well, I mean, I think it depends. It does hurt that they have a championship game because I think we saw last year, whoever goes to it and then loses actually hurts them more, I think, than if they wouldn't have a championship game. But, Drew had some great points as usual. But, I mean, I guess we'll have to wait and see whether or not it hurts them. I think he made a good point there at the end that, I think the Big Ten is balanced. I think each team kind of has their weaknesses that could, you know, effectively make them, have three or four losses in the season. I do agree with him. I don't think there's going to be a team that, you know, pulls away with, you know, has a, only a one loss season or something like that. I think each team will maybe have one or two losses, the top tier teams, of course. But, I don't think it's going to, technically, I guess, destroy the Big Ten in that sense. I think the Big Ten will have a shot, there. Top four teams, but I think he's right. If a team, you're going to have to only have one loss to get there. I mean, we see some of these other teams, TCU, or something like that, with coming into zero losses, but usually they don't even get to the top four ranking. But I don't think it's going to destroy them. I think there'll still be a chance, but they're either going to have to be undefeated or possibly with a one loss. And they're going to have some luck, with some of the other SEC teams. But I guess we'll have to wait and see. He may be right, but he also may be wrong.
Yeah, that's the other thing I was wondering. Like you said, with the TCUs, the Boise States, teams like the smaller Division I teams like this, how, if they have an undefeated season or a one-loss season, will that put them up, or will that be enough to put them up in that top four teams?
No, I don't think it will. I mean, I don't know what the statistics are or how much they've often played an SEC team, but no offense to TCU or Boise State teams, but they wouldn't be able to handle them. I mean, I'm sorry, but they wouldn't be able to. They don't have the size to match up with them, the speed just isn't there. But it's college football. Maybe I'm wrong. we've been wrong before. Especially me. But I don't think they would give them a shot even at that. I mean, they've created this one to kind of take away some of the angst against that needing a playoff and that kind of thing. But and then to do it and then put one of those teams in it would just, I think you're just kind of going back to where you were. I mean, the whole point of the playoff system is to have your top, teams in the country. But just because a Boise State or TCU goes undefeated, but they were playing mediocre teams at best to get there, I mean, that you're back in the same boat. You might as well not even have a playoff if you're going to put them back up there. So, no, I don't even honestly, if they go undefeated, I don't think they don't even make it in there. I just think that defeats the whole purpose.
See, now that's what I've been saying for years, that, Boise States and teams like that and the TCUs, they don't play a strong enough schedule, non-conference schedule, to even be considered for that. Or if they do have a strong non-conference schedule, they just don't play a good enough overall schedule. People have been saying for years that they beat everybody they played. It's not their fault of who they play or after the conference season. You have to give them a shot just because they beat everybody they play. Now, will you hear that sentiment, or will that, I'm quite sure we'll hear more sentiment from the Boise States, the TCUs, and those teams, because if they go unbeaten, people are going to say they deserve a shot at a title, at the championship.
Yeah, of course they're going to say that, sure. Part of me wants to say, yeah, give them a shot and then see them get embarrassed. Honestly, I don't think they're good enough to be there. I honestly don't. But honestly, it might come down to where one year they decide, hey, let's give them a shot. And then if they get embarrassed, then we all said we told you so. But if maybe they surprise us and they do, do win. But the odds of them winning are slim to none. I mean, sure, they're great players. I'm not saying that they're bad teams. I'm just saying they don't, just like you said, they don't play enough. Sure, they might have a good, strong non-conference schedule. But what about the rest of the season? They play mediocre teams at best. I mean, come on, you can't sit here and tell me that, playing mediocre teams is going to prepare you to play an top SEC team. That doesn't even come close. I mean, sure, if you want to give them a shot and watch them get embarrassed, go right ahead. But then you're just, the NCAA is just shooting themselves in the foot, and having this playoff would make it a bad decision to do that. So,
well, let me throw this other thing at you at the playoffs and for the TCUs or the Boise States. A lot of people say, and Boise has shown it, that for one game or maybe two games, they can play very well in a one or two game situation. In a situation like that, they might be able to play well, very well in the final two games.
Yeah, I mean, maybe they can. I suppose they could, but the reality is, you know, they don't. I think if hard work, I'm a believer in like all season. How was your season overall? So, I mean, if you can win a couple games here and there at the end, that's great. But, you know, if during the whole season you were playing mediocre teams, I mean, what does that say to the other teams that have a great, strong schedule and are playing these top-tier teams but, you know, may lose, so they have a couple losses under their belt, but maybe we're competitive with these teams, you know, but then you have a Boise State or TCU that just destroys the heck out of most of their teams anyway. Depends on each year, but, you know, they destroy them, and they just because they destroy them, it's because they're playing mediocre teams. So, I mean, I think, you know, you asked me that question, but I think that, you know, I don't think it matters either way. I mean, if you're going to play, you know, these teams at the end of the season, you got to have a great season, a great strong schedule throughout the whole season. You just can't be playing a couple teams here and there throughout the season, then go undefeated and say, hey, we deserve a chance. It doesn't work that way.
Well, what about a team like Notre Dame, as you heard? We mentioned Notre Dame. You know, what will their impact be? I mean, they usually played a pretty tough schedule. Now they've dumbed down their schedule a lot these last few years. Do they deserve a chance, or do you think they should have a chance to play in the national championship format in the playoffs?
I guess it depends, you know, what their schedule looks like. Obviously, we all know that. But, no, I mean, sure, I think a team like Notre Dame could deserve a chance. But, you know, again, it depends who they play. But like you said, the last couple of years they've been kind of dumbing down their schedule, you know, playing not as tougher teams. Just I think it's because I think they're kind of in a transition mode, or have been, and trying to get that with the coaching changes and all that good stuff, trying to get that program back up to where it is. But honestly, sure, I think they do deserve a chance, but the reality is I don't think they'll ever get there. I just don't think they have the physique that they used to have. You know, I think they've kind of dwindled down a little bit. People don't pay attention to them as much anymore. Sure, they have a huge fan following, but you know, I just don't think they have the national recognition as much anymore. And with the playoff system, I mean, we all know it's going to be the SEC. That's going to be the talk. They got what they wanted. So in the end, I think it actually hurts Notre Dame. But I do think they deserve a chance. But the odds of them getting there and actually getting some recognition for it, and maybe even possibly getting in the top four, they would have to have a tremendous team and then actually have to have a tremendous, you know, strength of schedule, which probably isn't going to happen for them. So the odds are that they're not going to get there.
I got a feeling we'll be talking about this for a long time with football season right around the corner. That's going to be a big topic of discussion. Well, let's turn our attention to another topic of discussion, and that's coming up on Thursday. The NBA draft comes up. Draymond Green, it looks like he's going to go somewhere between 20 and 30, somewhere in there. But how do you think – I think that would be a good – if he goes somewhere there, that means he's going to a good team. And so I look at it that way. So it would be, I think, a good move if Draymond can go in the first round and in the latter part of the first round.
Yeah, the key is to get on a good team because, you know, obviously we know who he has is sort of an IQ, you know, basketball IQ that's tremendously high, and he has a tenacity to, you know, just work really hard. But he's still got a lot to learn, obviously. We all know that. So, you know, if he can get on a good team with some good players around him and the good coaching staff, I think that's going to help him tremendously. So, you know, anywhere in there, I think we'd all be satisfied as Spartans fans are concerned. Whether what team picks him up, but, you know, there's a chance he may not, for some reason, he may not go in that somewhere in there. But I envision some team will say that we'll like him enough that, you know, he'll go somewhere in there. And I think most of these predictions are probably pretty correct, and he'll go somewhere in there.
Yeah, I would think so. I would like to think because he is that good to go, at least go be a first-round draft pick. From what we've seen over the years, he's become a very good rebounder, and his overall game has really, I think, has improved enough where he should be able to play in that league. You know, but whether he'll get a shot or chance or not, you know, we don't know.
Yeah, we don't know, but you know what? He's proven it here at MSU that he's determined enough to be the best that he can be. You know, he always does. He's always said the right things. He's always done the right things. He's been a leader. He could possibly be a leader in the NBA too as well if he wanted to be. So I think he has the right attitude. He has, you know, the right people around him to help him. So I think he'll be successful, actually quite successful in the NBA. It's just a matter of getting, you know, in the right system, which we've seen throughout the years. If a great player can be on the wrong system and then their career just goes downward from there, or the opposite can happen. A player not so good gets on the right system and then turn out to be great too. So there's many variables that can go into it, but I think he'll end up on a good team and things will go from there.
Yes, and then I wanted to talk a little bit more about football. I mean, the thing with Michigan State in the Big Ten and the other Big Ten teams, as we've said, the Big Ten is going to be balanced this year. There's a lot of teams in the Big Ten that are going to be fighting for the championship. And I sort of wonder, where will Michigan State fall in the mix of just being a good team in the Big Ten? Can they be one of the upper Big Ten teams, or will they just be another of the good, solid Big Ten programs? Well, let's go back to the phones and talk with Jerry. Jerry, how you doing?
Pretty good, Earl. Boy, leave it to Drew to stir the pot, huh?
Yes, he does.
You know, I generally agree with him. And yet, there is a strength of schedule component to this whole thing.
Yes.
Got to be worked out yet. And I guarantee you, Earl, the Big Ten may not be on the field projected to be at those games, but they are going to make their presence felt. You know, you're talking about it not only traditionally, but they're a tremendous economic engine.
Yes.
They hold a lot of clout with that. Whatever system is put in place, I guarantee you they're going to be, if they're not in the final championship game, they're going to be compensated, you know.
Yeah, they're going to get the money. Somehow they'll squeeze some money out of this.
Oh yeah. And, you know, what you have to wonder about is whether this is going to, you know, is going to generate more, you know, more cheating. Who knows with all this? It kind of depends on how that money is spread around. But regarding Michigan State, I think the next couple of years, I think they're going to be very competitive. A lot depends on the effect of Urban Meyer and Brady Hoke on their programs, because I think the rest of the conference, I don't see them really on the upswing, Earl.
You don't think they're getting? I sort of think they're big. I mean, Wisconsin, Iowa will always be there. Minnesota, Purdue, and Indiana. No, you know, we don't see them on the upswing. But the rest of the conference, and Nebraska is always going to be in the hunt somewhere. I think it's sort of on the upswing for most teams. But those three teams I mentioned, those three teams probably aren't going to.
I'm not so sure about Iowa. I mean, Northwestern, I think, is going to be at a certain plateau. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know if they're going to be any more than they're going to be, but I think certainly for the next couple of years, based on what D'Antonio has been able to generate here, you know, we're going to be okay. But beyond that, it's going to be interesting, very interesting.
Okay. Well, we'll see. And hopefully your Tigers, or actually your Yankees, are going to hold on. They certainly turned it around, and they're doing very well.
Somebody got Robbie Canoza here, didn't they?
Yeah.
Must have looked at that All-Star vote and said, hey, I better turn it on here.
That's for sure.
Hey,
good to talk to you. We'll talk to you later, Jerry. Yep, bye-bye. Talking with our good friend Jerry from Hasson. Hey, I want to thank you all. We've been talking a variety of sports, a lot of college football today, of course, and we'll be talking more college football tomorrow, and we'll look to hear from you tomorrow right here on AM 870 WKAR. Remember, we come your way Monday through Friday from 105 to 2 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR. If you've never called us before, we invite you to become a first-time caller. Join us in the afternoons. Call us up. Talk sports with us. And please don't wait till the very last minute to call. Call earlier in the show. Call anytime between 1 and 2 and talk sports with us. We welcome your calls. We want to talk with you. So give us a call, especially earlier. Don't wait till the very last minute to give us a call, but call a little bit earlier. Hey, we want to thank you for listening. Thank you for calling, and we'll invite you to join us again right here on AM 870 WKAR. You've been listening to Michigan State University Radio, AM 870 WKAR East Lansing. I want you to have yourself a very safe and a pleasant evening, and I'll look forward to hearing from you tomorrow right here on AM 870 WKAR.
Thanks for listening to Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR.